This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Okay, here we go. Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Jenny Urich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside, and you're in for a treat today. I'm so excited. Dr. Jenny Tates is here. Welcome.
Thank you, Jenny. I'm so excited to be here.
I just recently read your book called Stress Resets, How to Soothe Your Body and Mind in Minutes, which is so interesting. It's such an interesting topic. I learned about how stress really affects our ability to learn. It shuts off part of the brain, the non-dominant part. I learned that from Dr. Carla Hannaford. And I think we're all feeling the stress that's creeping in. And what an answer to be able to soothe in minutes, to find solutions. It's a fantastic book. I just wanted to read, though, one of my favorite things is your bio. What an accomplished life. Wow. Some people have such an accomplished life. Certified in cognitive behavioral therapy by American Board of Professional Psychology. Diplomat in the Academy of Cognitive Therapy. One of the first psychologists to merit Line and Board certification in DBT. Dr. Tates is a licensed clinical psychologist in New York and California, graduated magna cum laude from New York University, earned her doctorate in clinical psychology from Yeshiva's university program at the Albert Einstein School. This is amazing. Completed fellowships at Yale School of Medicine and the American Institute for Cognitive Therapy. Director of the DBT program, senior supervising psychologist. I mean, this just goes on and on. And you have your own practice, founder of LACBT DBT, a discreet boutique private therapy practice, prioritizing compassionate, effective, time-sensitive therapy. I mean, this just goes on and on. Plus, you ran a marathon.
Jenny, I use all the tools that I prescribe. I'm constantly using all the tools that I teach. And I feel so, so lucky to have trained in some of the best practices for coping. And I feel like it would be selfish to keep them to myself. I need to spread them to the world.
Well, and that is such a neat thing because you see firsthand, you've got this full life. You're out there, you're accomplishing things that would make people really nervous, but you are accomplishing them using your tools. You've also written two other books, End Emotional Eating, Using Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills to Cope with Difficult Emotions and Develop a Healthy Relationship with Food, How to Be Single and Happy, Science-Based Strategies for Keeping Your Sanity While Looking for a Soulmate. Your areas of expertise, Jenny, and this is from your website, which people can go check that out, drjennytates.com. I'll put a link. Depression, general anxiety, eating disorders, panic disorders, phobia, social anxiety, borderline personality, and just even the everyday things that a lot of people struggle with. Young adults struggling with perfectionism, procrastination, inattention, anxiety. Like, this is what we're all looking for answers for. And you are providing them. And your book, Stress Resets, it covers the background. So you get this in-depth, right? You cover the background. And then you give short-term and long-term strategies. Wow. I love how you said it was like the book you want to give your clients. It's like your care package to them. What beautiful words. And so now we can get that, Stress Resets. Can we start off by just this topic of stress? Because you wrote, and you know, people say some stress is good. Stress is part of the price we pay for living a life that matters. This is a big sentence, right? But then sometimes it tips over into a spot where it feels a lot more unhealthy. How do we know when it has tipped?
So we're all going to experience stress because life is stressful. Like, life is really hard right now. If you care about the world, you're going to experience some stress. You don't want to be detached and in like an alternate universe and disconnected from reality. So stress becomes problematic when we take something stressful and we co-author it. We start getting stuck in negative thoughts. We judge our body's stress response. Like if something difficult happened and you start getting stuck in worst case scenario thinking, that's going to do something to your body. Your body is going to start to probably feel tense. You're going to feel short of breath. And then with the combination of our thoughts and body kind of rebelling against us, we're in this like zone where we can't make good decisions and we act in ways that don't serve us. So maybe you had a stressful day at work. You can't let it go. You keep like obsessing about what this person said to you. You're texting a coworker about it. You're texting a friend about it. And then you're feeling really tense. And then maybe you lose it with your kid. And so you take an initial stress and just magnify it and multiply it. And emotions really come in waves and stress comes in waves. These things are pretty temporary, but we multiply it threefold with our thinking the worst, judging our body's response. We don't want to force our body to relax. We just don't want to hyper-focus on it and police it into a state of calm, which is going to backfire and make you more stressed. And then we don't want to act out in ways that just don't serve us. And then the second thing we really want to avoid is the replaying, because the replaying is the thing that takes stress and turns it into chronic stress. And so remarkably, people could have a stressor that they're dealing with for a long time, like a ill parent that's struggling with a chronic illness, or a child with special needs, or just parenting in general, but it becomes problematic stress for our bodies when we can't put it down. And we could all put things down. We're all between dealing with something really hard and approaching our lives. There are these moments of respite where we could kind of take a break and enjoy the peace of the moment.
I had never thought about this piece of making it worse for ourselves. And I'm going to take that with me forever, because it makes so much sense. But nobody really talks about this, Jenny. Like, okay, you're stressed out. So you do the wrong thing and it gets worse and it gets worse. Come on. This is absolutely, you say we exacerbate our suffering. This is the truth. Like, we do this. So you say it's, and I totally relate to this because I drop like food on my clothes a lot. So you say it's like trying to remove a stain in a way that spreads the mess. I totally related to that. Like, there's already a little bit of a problem there. And then you kind of make it worse. What are the ways, you know, you just talked about some of them, like you're texting a friend or you're overthinking on it. But what are some of the ways, especially in today's society, that we are taking our stresses and exacerbating our suffering?
Yeah. And just to come back to what you're saying, like just to give like some color to these examples, I share a story in the book that is so salient. One morning, my husband was rushing and he's literally spilled a gallon of milk on the floor, and he ends up cleaning it like really aggressively and ends up cutting his hand on the kick plate of the bottom of our refrigerator. And then he is like obsessing about how this is like the worst day ever and goes to the drugstore to get a bandage, because we didn't have bandages in the house at that time, and gets into a fender bender. And so like these things are like physically are worse, but also in terms of like scope are so much worse psychologically, logistically, all things. And you're dealing with insurance, and thank God no one was really hurt, but it's a whole thing.
Right.
And so this is kind of like a tragic comedy. We need to kind of see, like, this moment is so hard, isn't it? We need to be so self-compassionate and try to rein it in and keep it like the small stain without the spreading it. And the stain could be something beautiful that's just the price of a meaningful life. If your kid stains your clothes, that's, you know, the privilege of having kids. And so how do we change things? I think the first thing we all need to do is STOP, which is an acronym for slowing down, taking a step back, observing, and proceeding mindfully, because our minds can go like 1,000 miles an hour and our bodies could go 100 miles an hour. And if we're going 5 miles an hour, we have so much more room for damage control. Yeah, there's something about like slowing things down where things aren't going to get so chaotic and hectic. And we can actually see, like, what am I thinking? What am I feeling in my body? What am I doing? And that's so different than being in like autopilot, like being short with your kid because you had bad sleep that night. And then not only did, you know, or you did you have bad sleep the night before, but now your kid won't go to sleep. And so you're setting yourself up for bad sleep tonight too.
Well, it's a great example. You start the book out with that example, because if you spill the milk, okay, it's irritating. You got to pick it up. You got to clean it. You said he was already tired and rushing. You got to clean it up. You're talking, it's a $4 loss, a $5 loss. Are you going to remember that in a year? Yeah, maybe. It's funny. You know, remember when I spilled the whole milk? But then you throw in a fender bender and that becomes a lot more of an expensive situation. And so I just love taking this with me. Like, if I feel stressed out, I'm taking with me this question of, is what I'm going to do exacerbating? Is it going to make me feel worse? So you talk about that we are reacting impulsively and we could de-escalate the situation, but we are tending to these things that are like scrolling and they're not really making us feel better, even though we think that they should. You say stop prioritizing comfort and distraction at the expense of truly enhancing our lives. So have you seen this in working with clients and who you're talking to? Has it sort of gotten worse, or has it always been kind of a thing like, oh, we're numbing ourselves with TV, or has it gotten worse over the time because of screens?
Yeah, I think it's probably gotten worse over time, but I think as human beings, we just want to like avoid pain and seek pleasure. And so I think this has always been there. But again, like one of the things I really want people to do is take inventory and think about like, what are the pros? What are the cons? Like, what are the pros of going on my phone and staying up late because I had a bad day? What are the pros of reading for 20 minutes? And maybe that's like a little bit more effortful and I have an urge to scroll on my phone, but what are the downsides of each? And the reason I wrote this book is because it's really hard to remember in the heat of the moment that what we feel is most alluring is gonna haunt us. You know, so many people that I work with, you know, do things like order something that they don't need, which then, you know, again, going back to like the waste of time and the waste of money and having to try to return it. And then maybe you have to incur shipping costs and maybe that'll only give you a store credit and all the things. And that's just a small one, or eating things that just don't, aren't honoring your hunger cues. And especially if you have health conditions, like you're trying to work on numbing yourself with food. And again, like even social media is so interesting. It's right at our fingertips, but why, if we feel overwhelmed in our own lives, would we check out and spend close to 20 hours a week? That's the average amount of time people spend on social media, 20 hours a week, looking in on other people's lives that seem apparently perfect. It's like more like masochism than self-soothing. And so I want people to really remember is there are a lot of things. These things are harder. Going for a walk is harder than ordering Postmates, but the upside is so much greater. And so this is really about being willing to have less instant gratification for more self-efficacy, a feeling of the priceless feeling of like, I got this, I'm living the life that I want. That is long-term safe investment rather than this quick, you know, high interest rate credit card.
What's really neat too is that a lot of your ideas are fairly quick, 5 minutes. I mean, it's not like this is going to take you 5 months, and you give some long-term ideas too. But in the short term, I even love this sentence. You can reduce, this is like, it's like, I should put this on my fridge. You can reduce stress by 50% immediately at no cost without even trying. Just don't make it worse. Like, okay, just stop, right? Don't make it worse.
I love that.
A fantastic sentence. So this concept of just like, okay, slow down, don't make it worse. And then you talk about this concept of opposite action. All behavior therapies for depression and anxiety are from acting differently from how you feel. Can you give us an example of opposite action in our lives?
Yeah, I'm so happy that you asked about this because this is really one of my favorites, and this is one of the rules that I really design my life by. Oftentimes, we do things that feel comfortable in the moment, and when we're anxious, it's comfortable to avoid. When we're sad, it's comfortable to isolate, withdraw, beat ourselves up. But what happens if you do the opposite? What would you do if you felt great? Maybe you would be present in the moment. Maybe you would reach out to someone that you have previously enjoyed spending time with. Maybe you would re-engage in a hobby that you once enjoyed that was really like captivating and nourished you. And so a lot of times people wait to feel better to do the thing that's going to ultimately help them. But what we need to do is like put on the clothing of feeling better, even if we're not feeling it. This isn't just like a nice idea and like a quick, like, oh, do the opposite. This is one of the cornerstones of all behavior therapies. Apps that help people with moderate to severe depression that encourage people to design a schedule with opportunities to do things that are enjoyable and also things that give you a sense of accomplishment. Because we don't just need to like enjoy, we need to feel like we're growing and evolving and doing difficult things. Apps that do that work as well as antidepressant medications. And again, these are free. They do take work. It does take work to sign up for a class or be vulnerable with a friend and get up and get out if you feel exhausted and depleted. But the upsides are so worth it. And so if this sounds overwhelming, to really think about like, what emotion am I feeling and how can I experiment with opposite action? You should try this out. If you feel really angry with your kid, yelling or your partner, yelling is authentic and is actually feeding anger. That is how you take anger. And again, blow it up. You take a little anger, you want to make it bigger, yelling is the way. That is not cathartic. But what happens if you do something different? An opposite action I really want to highlight needs to be your mind and your body. What happens if you give the benefit of the doubt? You can't just speak nicely while thinking the worst. You need to do it all the way. Give someone the benefit of the doubt and speak kind of nicely. That doesn't mean saying nothing. It's like if your partner was really late and you were really exhausted and the food dinner got cold, you could say like, hey, I know that it wasn't your intention, but it would really mean a lot if we could agree on a time that we're going to sit down together, because I'm starving and I was looking forward to this. That's still opposite action. This is not about like faking nice. This is about what would be aspirational and intentional, and how can I do that? And that again is such a freeing thing. Like, I really think peace of mind isn't life being easy, but it's knowing that you can count on yourself.
And it's good thought. It's good thought to think, this is what I would normally react. What would be the 180, right? To even just have that thought, it's going to change things.
And you could rehearse it. You could review it in your mind, because this is hard work. Mm-hmm. What would I do? Like, mental rehearsal. I feel a little nervous at a party. I'm going to go late, leave early, look on my phone, just talk to the one person I know. What would I do if I was doing different? I would go on time. I would go to up to 3 new people. And mentally rehearsing that is muscle building. That is training you to actually do the thing.
Wow. Opposite action. When participants behave in a more outgoing way, even if they weren't feeling outgoing, they experience more positive emotions. Really cool things in this book about that. Okay. I have never heard of dialectical behavior therapy ever. Should I have? Are people talking about this?
DBT is a treatment that teaches people a set curriculum. And so instead of therapy just being like, you come in with your problems and you have to kind of talk about them, which could sometimes be re-experiencing the most upsetting things from the week, if you just are talking about them without necessarily generating solutions, instead of doing that, DBT teaches a curriculum where you learn how to be more mindful, you learn how to be more effective in relationships, you learn how to manage emotions and cope with really hard times without making them worse. Of course, there is time to tailor this to your life, but instead of therapy being kind of like the list of the people that are bothering you, it's also, what are the ways you're going to improve things going forward? And how can you make things better rather than staying miserable?
What is, everyone should be taking this curriculum.
This can be a little challenging to find. I certainly encourage people to pursue DBT, but DBT is really meant for people that it is a time commitment. You need to do skills training plus individual therapy, and there's fewer therapists that are trained in this. But my goal with this book is for people that aren't necessarily needing a full dose of DBT to have an introduction to the skills from DBT that we can employ even without. But for sure, if you feel like you really struggle with your emotions and your life feels really overwhelming, I highly recommend looking for a therapist trained in dialectical behavior therapy. And this was initially designed to help people that really struggle intensely. But now a lot of people are finding that this is just useful for us all. Like, all DBT therapists I know are using all these skills in their day-to-day lives, myself included.
Wow. And you said you use it when you feel like you're in the emotional. The wording is so good here. The emotional equivalent of a triathlon. Like, you're saying it's good for smaller things, but also for these bigger things. And what a way to put it, the emotional equivalent of a triathlon. That's like what you were saying earlier. You're dealing with aging parents, or you've got this stressful situation that is lasting longer than maybe an acute situation. And then you have, okay, so tell us then, your curriculum, distress tolerance, that's like a small part of DBT?
Distress tolerance is one of the modules of DBT. That's one of the 4 pieces. For ease, I just said like how to deal with a crisis without making it worse. But the technical term is distress tolerance, how to and again, this is like very related to stress tolerance, like, right? Like, how do we deal with something hard without making it worse? How do we practice like this beautiful dance between total acceptance and total change? And how do we both make this moment a little bit better, but also allow ourselves to feel our feelings?
Oh, I love this book. I'm learning about something completely new I've never even heard of. And all of these themes run through this book.
On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure. Whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit, I keep my Vessies with me because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessies Stormburst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vessi collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vessi has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to vessi.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's VESSI.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
So one of the things that really caught my attention, Jenny, was about this crisis counseling, because the point here, and we're, you know, we're trying to get outside. That's like the point of what we got going on here. Trying to get outside in a systematic way throughout the year. It is a simple solution for a lot of things. It's not very easy to implement, but the concept of it is simple. And you're talking in here, all of these are so fascinating. You had a period of time where you were working in crisis counseling. So you've got people that are in their hardest moments. And you would think, well, gosh, how do you help someone in their hardest moment? Like, oh, you must have to do all these sorts of huge things to help them. And it really wasn't. It was sort of this set of simple things. So could you talk about what you did and what you learned during that time?
Absolutely. And so, yeah, I worked as a volunteer on 1-800-SUICIDE, the National Suicide Helpline. Before I went to graduate school as a psychologist, I was like, how do I know that this is what I want to do? And that was like a perfect way to get my feet wet. And I was really nervous. I mean, I'm, you know, a college age person and dealing with people in their hardest moments. And it was pretty remarkable. Like, the goal is just to make someone feel understood and to help them kind of change the channel a little bit, to see bigger than what they're mean minds were telling them in that moment, or their narrow perspective in that moment. And so very small things, you know, collaborating with someone to think about what would they do if they were trying to design a better night, or what might they do if they were feeling a little bit better, or what have they done in the past that has helped them? And a lot of these tools are very similar to the ones I now teach as a DBT therapist. And a colleague of mine, David Jobes, who's a leading suicide researcher, really says it best, like, people are remarkably good at getting better with the right tools. And so we all experience this, right? Like, if we're really upset about something, a friend might call us and within minutes, we might be feeling better. If we're really upset and could somehow, to align with your message, if we could leave our phone at home, go outside for a couple minutes, purposefully pay attention to like five beautiful flowers, something beautiful that we see in the sky, you know, if we do some sort of like personal scavenger hunt, it really widens our perception. And if we're able to, again, like, be there with our mind and bodies and with our behavior, again, different if you're like, you know, walking and replaying your life's frustrations, but this can really change things around.
Wow. There were so many sentences in here about just the minor things, experimenting with minor tweaks, going to bed an hour earlier, making sure one social plan a month helped with emotional regulation. So it's a story of someone you're working with. You say, when you're struggling, it can feel tempting to write off suggestions as too simplistic or tell yourself you just don't have the energy. And I just thought, I mean, this is incredible. People in their hardest moments, you say, help them feel understood and less alone and create a coping plan just for the next few hours. Like, can you get through the crossword puzzle, a TV show? Can you reach out to a friend? Simple things help someone get through the night safely. So you really lay this foundation at the beginning of the book about the power of these simple tools. And then you go through a whole bunch of them, a whole bunch that are just, it's a couple minutes. So one of them I would love to focus on is taking a walk outside, because that fits. So, I mean, if you're like in a spot where you're feeling high stress, I mean, you're thinking a couple minutes, 20 minutes, you know, what are we going to do outside that's going to help us to feel better?
You could either or. I mean, like, everything and anything. Like, I don't want people to feel like a walk only works if it's 20 minutes. There is research that even a few minutes helps, but longer predicts longevity. So there's something about walking outside for longer that's really helpful. And there's something about walking outside, again, that like allows us to expand our view. We can be like tunnel visioned on the problems in our life, but if we're walking outside, we literally broaden our focus. And this is good for our mental health. This is good for our physical health. There's studies that find that being outside in nature specifically improves our creative thinking. And more is more, but if you only have a few minutes, a little bit can go a long way.
There's a lady named Katie Bowman, who is a biomechanist, and she calls it long distance looking. So you talk in the book about expanding your gaze. And she was saying that the ring around your eye is always contracted. Like if you were like lifting biceps or something, doing bicep curls. But she said it's always contracted when you're indoors and you have a short range of vision. It's always contracted when you're sleeping. But when you have a long field of vision, like you talk about expanding your gaze, that ring relaxes. Even your eye. Are relaxing and you feel it. Like you said, so you just go, even if you just step out, it gives your eyes a chance to relax and you feel that in your body. So that was one of the ones you talk about, the box breathing, sighing. I mean, these things are like so quick. What about, okay, so here's one that people talk about a lot now is the cold plunge, but you give an idea because I'm like, I don't have one of those tub things. You know, you give an idea that you just use a bowl.
Yeah. So this is very specific. This is like a tool that is taught as part of DBT distress tolerance. This isn't, none of these things are just like randomly made up by me. And we all as humans have this incredible dive reflex. So as humans, if a human body is submerged in cold water, we automatically slow our heart rate down and blood flow is redirected from non-essential to essential organs. And just very practically, like if you were to jump in a cold pool, you would not be thinking about whatever was on your mind before in the cold water and hopefully after. And so a technique taught in DBT based on the science of the dive response is to take a salad bowl. You can fill it with ice water. You could set a timer for 30 seconds, 30 seconds to like 60 seconds, no more than that. And you hold your breath and submerge your face into the ice water. And again, we can all do this with, you know, some frozen vegetable bags and water. And again, 30 seconds, this isn't like hours and this isn't expensive. And if you were wearing an Apple Watch, your heart rate would come down. And it is a really quick way to kind of create this control alt delete physiologically, but that also gives us a little bit of room with our minds because our minds, our thoughts should slow down. And also just behaviorally, I think it cements this message that we can do hard things and we can improve things and we can do things that feel uncomfortable and actually make us better.
I mean, 30 to 60 seconds, as you say, in our complicated world, it's all too easy to reject seemingly simple solutions. And it is. Things are so complex. So you're like, there's no way. 30 seconds of my face in a salad bowl. But then you'd say you can't. It, the jolt disrupts your thinking and leaves you feeling refreshed. Isn't that what we need sometimes, Jenny? Like, I need my thoughts disrupted and I need to feel refreshed. And you would think this is going to take forever, but maybe it's only going to take you 45 seconds.
And I think this is one of the problems with stress relief. I think a lot of people think they need the day off. They need to go on vacation. They need something big, but instead of like starving overfilling ourselves, we need to regularly snack on these smaller doses of comfort.
Right, right. So this book is filled with dozens of those types of ideas, digging in your heels, all sorts of ideas that you, I mean, this is like a, it's almost like having like a little first aid kit, you know, like I'm struggling. I need, like you talked about with your husband, he just needed a Band-Aid. In certain cases, you just need to, you come grab an idea from this book, especially, I mean, are you finding like this is great for teens?
I hope it's great for everyone. I mean, these are the things that, again, like have changed my life. And I think different things work for different people, which is why there are so many. I want people to try and some things might work better for you than others. I have certain breathing practices I like more than others. And so I want people to find the thing that works for their unique tastes and for the circumstances and their situation. Again, like I just want a full buffet of options. So you have a lot more. And it's hard to remember these in hard moments. So I want people to like use some post-its and have them flagged and accessible.
Yeah, just grab the book. So you have these ones in the beginning of the book that are these short-term, here's a 30-second, here's a five-minute thing. And then you have these ideas that are, you call them buffers. But they're like a little bit more of a long-term idea or just like things you could implement going forward. And some of them were so intriguing to me. One of the ones was just about casual connections. I was so surprised to read that casual connections, but truth be told, Jenny, like we walk in the neighborhood across the street sometimes, and I wave at the cars when they drive by and they wave back usually. And That makes you feel really good. It's wild. So talk to us about, I mean, you're talking about, like, normally we just keep to ourselves, but you're saying we're overlooking this conversational piece, but that's casual. It doesn't have to be like with the best friend.
Right.
It's going to help us feel better if we're just connecting with people in our community.
Yeah. So in terms of casual connections, so often we think that stress relief is just about ourselves. We need to feel better. We need to like lock ourselves in the bathroom and take a minute for ourselves. But I want stress relief to also be for the larger purpose of helping other people. And so casual connections are good for us. They force us to like put a pause on what is going on in our minds and focus on someone else. And it's also so important for another person to feel seen, especially if they're working a job that might not be fulfilling or long hours or be struggling with the loneliness epidemic that so many people are struggling with. And small things make a huge difference. Like people being told to like act extroverted at Starbucks actually feel better for having done so, even if they're introverted. And we're all interconnected. And maybe you don't want to be best friends with your neighbor, but saying hello maybe gives you the freedom to ask them for ketchup if you ran out. And so we should be looking at other people because we want to make a difference in our own lives and the lives of others. And it's a huge escape from this tunnel vision on our own problems.
It is amazing how those little things, they just help everyone feel better. You know, so someone's waving at me, I'm on a little walk, I'm like, I just feel, that makes me feel so good and seen. And this buffer idea, this more long-term one, it fits right in line with one of the shorter ones, which was just to have a half smile. You talked about a lady that was in her 80s, and she's lonely. And she was like, oh, I'm just going to add in this half smile, which I don't even know. I don't know if I could do a half smile, just like a little bit, right? A little bit of an upturn. That's it. You're doing
it. It's really a quarter of a smile. Yeah.
Oh, it's only a quarter. There's a little bit of an upturn of the face. And it said, after several decades spent living in the same New York City apartment building, she's been there for 30 years, 40 years. She was able to create connections with neighbors she'd been seeing for years, but had never spoken with.
Jenny, a lot of us don't realize that our faces are like communicating, do not disturb. And that facial expression is not only like painful for other people to witness, it's a landscape that creates more tension in us. If you're driving and you're scowling, you are, you know, maybe building a tension headache. But if you could relax your face, again, is like almost an opposite action, is an inroad towards being more accepting. If you relax your face, it's a little easier for your mind to be less judgmental. And for people that want community, it can feel overwhelming. How do I strike up conversation? What's the right thing to say? I forgot this person's name. But a facial expression that's more welcoming is a really powerful first start. And so maybe the half smile comes first and then conversation comes next. But even if you're on your own, if you are feeling anxious or overwhelmed or frustrated with your kid, an expression of serenity can truly start the process of creating more peace.
Amazing. And I do love that the shorter term ones and the longer term ones, a lot of them tie together. I mean, those two really tie together because now you have your half smile. And so now maybe you're going to have more opportunity for casual conversations. And this changes into a lifestyle change that over time really affects the quality of your life. Another one of the buffers, and there's, like I said, there's so many, there's 34 just of these buffers that are more long-term ideas. Certain ones will fit for certain people. You're talking about nasal breathing, pacing your breath, laughing, humor, all these different ideas. And with some really cool tie-ins, like I did end up watching a couple of the TED Talks about 10 ways to have a better conversation. I watched that one. And there was another one with a man who had lost his legs.
Dr. BJ Miller. Yeah.
Yes. And so those were really impactful. So I love that there's all these things that you can take from it. Even the most relaxing song ever made, you mentioned. So people can check the book out to find out what is that, the most relaxing song ever made. But of one of these 34 long-term ideas, swap your screen for morning sun. Talk to us about what that's going to do.
Yeah. So how often do we start our days looking at our phone and going from website to website? It's like we just woke up and we're already stressed. And there's something instead, if we're not going to be starting work for a couple hours, or we're not going to be responding to emails first thing in the morning, which we probably shouldn't be doing because it's not enough time. What about starting the day with like making your bed and sitting outside for a couple minutes? There's something about getting sunlight in your eyes first thing in the morning, just for a couple minutes. You don't need to stare directly at the sun, but just in the general direction without sunglasses, that actually improves nighttime sleep. It starts like a like this process of getting the right kind of cortisol in you that affects your ability to sleep later in the day. And there's just something very peaceful and serene about seeing again, like there's so much more than our tiny screens. And I try personally to wake up a little bit before my kids wake up, sit outside, get some morning sun. Again, I love stacking these together, kind of like you mentioned. So I try to do my slow breathing and the morning sun at the same time. And that's so different than waking up feeling like, oh my gosh, I have to get back to all these people and this person didn't get back to me and what's happening in the world. And obviously we want to get to all of that, but maybe we need to recharge a little bit first.
Oh, I love it. And you say our grandparents never woke up like this, which was thought-provoking to me. I thought, oh, well, yeah, what must it have been like for them? You know, you don't wake up and immediately you said lost in email, skimming the news, peeking at random people's stories, which isn't that how it is? I'm like, I don't even know if I know who this person is, but I can see what they're doing, pondering your to-do list. So really good information there about short-term and long-term.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Can we hit on the topic of this swap of, I like this one, I'm already using it, the swap of, I feel nervous, I have butterflies in my stomach, to, I'm excited. How does that work?
Yeah, so often we judge, a lot of the feelings of nervousness are also very similar to the feelings that we have when we're excited. And so if someone's about to give a speech, maybe they're so focused on, oh my gosh, I'm so nervous, what are people going to think? Rather than thinking like, I'm excited, I get to make my friend feel really celebrated on her 40th birthday, and or about a job interview. I'm really excited to learn more and about this opportunity, or doing something at your kid's school where you have to speak in front of a large group, to really reframe. And yeah, this is reframing your physical sensations is a really powerful way to start to feel better. People like students that are taking the GRE, the entrance exam for graduate school, that are taught to see their things like knots in their stomach as a sign that they're doing well, actually do better. And so we're so quick to think, I need to calm down. But what we need to do is like allow ourselves to feel excited, feel the feelings, and channel them in a more constructive, in a constructive direction.
I think even just that one part is so huge, because how many situations like that do we have in our lives? I mean, we have so many where you just feel like, ooh, a little bit of nerves. You say, think of the butterflies in the stomach as beneficial and a sign that oxygen is being delivered to the body. What a different reframe, as opposed to, I'm so nervous, I'm so nervous. I would think like, oh, this is what I do. Why did I sign up for this? Why am I doing this? Why did I say yes to this? I mean, that's my tendency. But instead to say, oh, yes, there's oxygen being delivered to my body. This is great. It significantly affects how we approach and feel about situations and how we perform. And then here's to your point just a second ago, it affects other people. That's amazing. It's not just for us.
It's contagious. Yeah. And I should add, even if something's not exciting, like let's say I'm driving on the freeway and my hands start to feel kind of clammy, I could even just say like, this belongs. Like, this is like, I just saw an ambulance. Like, of course people are going really fast. People might not be paying attention. I want to be alert. I want to be kind of, my body's serving me in this moment. It's helping me stay focused. And this energy is helping me drive safely.
Yeah. Jenny, I found a lot of hope in this book. You also talk a lot about overthinking, which I think is something that comes up a lot. You know, I have read that when we think back on our positive experiences, that those feelings arise. Like each month I'm looking back, like, what did we do last month? And the reflection is so meaningful to me. But you were talking about if we're reflecting back on these stressful things, it can feel like we're right back in it. It almost can feel the same as when we were going through it. And so if people are interested, I mean, I think a lot of people struggle with overthinking, and I have at certain times, certainly too. But you say even thinking about events that occurred decades ago spiked the blood pressure. So what's an idea? You know, you say 80, I love this, 80 to 99%. So it might almost be everyone. People admit to having repetitive, unhelpful, negative thoughts, whether about their appearance, work, or ability to cope. How do we deal with this overthinking that's not scrolling on our phones?
There's so many different things we can do. I think even just knowing when you're most likely to fall into it, so you're kind of like aware. And then there's a lot of different strategies. Sometimes we're overthinking because we need to process something, but thinking about it isn't the best way to process it. Instead, there are ways to kind of go deeper into your feelings through exercises that I talk about, like expressive writing. And then sometimes we're thinking that we don't need to process. We're just having intrusive thoughts that are almost like spam that we don't really need to sit and process. We need to just kind of create a spam filter. And a funny, playful one is just even singing the thoughts that keep haunting us, like, no one likes me. Because, you know, having that, you know, as an upbeat tune in your mind is a quick way to untangle from it rather than let it kind of live in your, you know, be a constant news ticker in your mind.
Yeah. I mean, that's funny. Like, really, truly, if you sing, no one likes me, it almost would, probably would change to be humorous fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Or just strange. And so that's that good distraction that you can find. So stop prioritizing comfort and distraction at the expense of truly enhancing our lives. This is finding like the ice in the bowl. I mean, truly, so many hope-filled ideas. Plus, I learned about DBT, opposite action, all these things that I hadn't really heard about that I can take with me in my life. So I absolutely loved it. Stress Resets, How to Soothe Your Body and Mind in Minutes. This is one of several books that you have. People can find out more on your website, Dr. Jenny Tates, and on Instagram, which is where I reached out to you. And I'm so glad that you spent this time with us. What a book. There's even more that I didn't cover. You have been featured. That was another thing. I really loved reading about you. I mean, you have been in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, Harvard Business Review, Vogue, Oprah, Time Magazine, Newsweek, Woman's Health, Cosmopolitan, Teen Vogue, and then all these other media things, NPR. I mean, this is absolutely incredible. And you're using these strategies to create this fulfilling life. It's incredibly inspiring. Dr. Jenny, we always end our podcast with the same question. What's a favorite memory from your childhood that was outside?
Thank you. Thank you so much for all the kind words. A favorite memory from my childhood that was outside. There are so many, but I spent almost every Sunday as a child going to my grandparents' house, and they had this beautiful backyard. And my grandfather was like such a gentle soul that like birds, like literally bluebirds would eat out of his, blue jays would eat out of his hands. And so feeding the birds with my grandpa in his backyard was a very special memory from childhood. And it just speaks to how much outdoors can be powerful and how much the people that matter to us can really touch us.
Ah, that's beautiful. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for being here. I love this book, Stress Resets, one to just have like almost in your back pocket. It wouldn't quite fit, but like, you know, you keep in your purse, keep it on hand, right? You've got kids, you've got teens, you got preteens, all sorts of ideas in here for you that are short-term and long-term to help soothe your body and mind in minutes. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking It.